You will hear an interview with an archaeologist called Julian Radwinter. For questions 15 to 20, choose the answer A, B, C or D, which fits best according to what you hear. In the exam, you have 70 seconds to look at part 3.
My guest today's the archaeologist Julian Radwinter, who works at Dunstan University. Julian, welcome.
Hi.
Tell us about how you first got involved in archaeology. What attracted you to it?
Well, it all started when a team of archaeologists came to dig up the field next to my parents' farm one summer. It was an exciting prospect for a teenager, and despite strict instructions from my father not to make a nuisance of myself, it wasn't long before I was roped in to lend a hand, on a purely voluntary basis, of course. But there's always a need for someone to do the fetching and carrying on such digs, and I was full of questions. That's the sort of boy I was, and I guess it broke up the day for those involved in the more tedious work. Anyway, I was in my element, and from then on, there was no question what subject I was going to study at university.
And does the subject still hold the same fascination?
Well, yes. I mean, on that dig, some strangely shaped metal objects were unearthed, clearly carbon datable to the time of the buildings they'd already found traces of. But this object didn't seem to fit in with anything they'd found. And this is exactly the kind of puzzle that makes the subject so gripping. You have a fragmented object and some contextual information, but clearly pieces of information are missing and need to be filled in by the archaeologist. You have to make assumptions, interpretations based on the evidence you've got. And that often involves eliminating possibilities, ticking off the things it might be, but clearly isn't. At the end of the day, it's still mostly conjecture, so the debate continues.
Mm-hmm. Do you think archaeology gets the recognition it deserves as a profession?
Well, people think of archaeology and they think of ancient civilizations, buried treasure and all sorts of romantic notions, often stemming from the mythology surrounding startling 20th century discoveries in the Eastern Mediterranean and the Nile Valley. All that's fueled by the image projected by certain feature films that beguile people into the idea that archaeology is a glamorous discipline. I have no problem with any of that, but everyday archaeology actually involves a lot of painstaking gathering of data, often in far from romantic surroundings. You get cold, wet and dirty. And the discoveries are mostly small and cumulative rather than dramatic, which is the point that the world at large really tends to miss. Nonetheless, it is a science, and it has a lot to tell us, and the data is actually surprisingly accessible to ordinary people in the way that a lot of science isn't.
Which brings us neatly on to your own current research post. Why have you decided to concentrate your efforts on southeastern England?
Well, most of my colleagues are jetting off around the world, digging in remote spots in faraway places. It calls for a lot of organisation and involves all manner of setbacks and frustrations, not to mention tedious long-haul flights and endless inoculations. But I have none of those problems. Indeed, now that archaeology is becoming much more oriented towards the collection and analysis of data rather than just locating and digging up key sites, we come to realise just how much England has to offer. Basically, with a relatively modest budget, we can gather far more relevant data here than in many of the places that have been the typical focus of archaeological activity.
But why is that? And what is it that you're hoping to find?
Well, for the last 2,000 years, and probably long before that too, southeastern England has undoubtedly been one of the most densely inhabited parts of the world. There was a lot of human activity here, and the evidence is to be found beneath our feet. The land's been intensively farmed since the Iron Age, and most modern-day villages have been continuously inhabited for over 1,000 years, some much longer. But I find it tantalising to think that you've only got to dig a hole somewhere in a settlement, and you'll probably uncover data that'll reveal how people lived and the way different things influenced their way of life, be it political changes, climate change, disease or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Finally, Julian, you're taking part in a project that looks at the role of humour in archaeology. That sounds intriguing. Tell us a bit about that.
Well, traditional storytelling, the passing on of ideas and deep cultural knowledge, is one of those things that we're tending to lose with the digital age. And it struck me that it's there in archaeology itself. There's often a mismatch between the dry reports written up after successful digs and the warmth and intimacy that is built up within a team. Basically, you're all living and working cheek by jowl for long periods, and a kind of camaraderie develops. The telling of anecdotes around the campfire after a long day's digging is full of humour, but also full of the folk memory of archaeology itself. The project I'm involved in seeks to capture and preserve some of that rich fund of humour and anecdote, so that it can be preserved for future generations, along with the archaeological evidence itself.
Fascinating. Thank you very much for coming.
Now play the recording again. That is the end of part 3. Now turn to part 4.